Hey everybody, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and today I want to go over the 2016 WD Forecast, which is the 2016 Wireless Deployment Forecast Edition. And I thought it would be good for us to just look at what's coming up in the deployment industry, for wireless deployment specifically. If you don't know that by now, I'm surprised you're listening. But I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Happy New Year. First off, I want to thank Tower Safety. TowerSafety.com. They do tower training and they're about to do drone training. So they do everything from safety, tower safety, OSHA, and all that. You know what I mean? They do the training that field workers need, not just tower climbers, but drone pilots. They're going to bring that out. And they're also going to do training for anyone who works at a tower site. Again, the other thing I want you to know is I do have my book out, the Wireless Deployment Handbook, the LTE Small Cell C-RAN and DAS Edition. Very important if you want to deploy small cells. That's why I constantly put out information about if you want to deploy small cells, DAS, or CRAN. CRAN is basically outdoor DAS. You have the concentrated BBU and the radio access network, the radio head, spread out throughout the city. Let me get back on point here. Let's talk about what's going to happen in 2016 and what we're going to see, or what I think we're going to see. We have the 600 megahertz auctions. Now, something you should know with the auctions is it'll take the OEMs about a year to make the equipment. They're probably already started on the equipment to get a head start so they can actually sell something to the carriers. I just see that happening in 2017, just to be clear. It's one of those things that it just takes a little time to do the equipment, to planning, and so on. Now, they probably already planned for the tower sites to add the radio heads and add the antennas, or maybe make improvements on those particular items. Now, that's basically for the carriers. But what about the broadcasters? What do the broadcasters have to do? Now, I know you've been reading about the shortage of tower workers and everything to make this happen. And to be honest with you, I really don't know what's going to happen. Like, what are the broadcasters going to do? Let's just ask some questions. Maybe they'll just take the money and run. Decommission and retire. Wouldn't that be easy? Hey, we're done. We're out of here. Are they going to move to the new bands? Are they going to actually start over again with a new channel over the air and promote it and try to get everybody to follow them again? Is there really enough money in over-the-air broadcast for them to do that? Maybe. You know, I don't know. Local news is popular. Do people watch it over the air? Do people watch it on cable? You know, on, you know, your local cable channel? Or, which I do, I'm going to be honest with you. I just watch it in the local cable channel. Or do people watch it like on DirecTV? Do they have a local feed? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not sure. And you know what? A lot depends on what part of the country you're in. For instance, if you're here in the Northeast where I am, or even out in the West Coast, I'd say in the populated areas, chances are you're going to use cable or DirecTV or something you already have. If you're in the Midwest, where cable company, we're saying a sparse area, I shouldn't just say the Midwest, but a sparse area where there's not a lot of population, you may rely on DirecTV and over the air. So it all depends where you're at. You know, it's a big country, the USA. That's what I'm talking about. But even Canada. Canada's huge. And now Mexico, I don't know what they do there. It seems like they have different TV viewing habits there. Here in the US and even up in Canada, we're pretty well addicted. We still watch a lot of TV. That's another thing. You know, now we watch, I was just going to say, we watch it on our iPads, on our phones, on our laptops. Maybe that'll be a new outlet. What do the broadcasters have to gain by moving to the new a new band or a new spectrum? Or will they just go to another carrier? And you see this all the time. When they went digital, they being the broadcasters, when the broadcasters went digital over the air, they had multiple channels now, let's say two or three channels based on the spectrum they have. Maybe what they'll do is just put their primary channel, or let's say their primary broadcast, on one channel, and maybe they'll just bring a partner in for the other channel and lease it to them. You know, just get monthly reoccurring, or split the maintenance cost, or split the tower cost, something like that. It's something to think about because they're trying to be more, let's say, cost efficient. You know, they're trying to save money. That's what I'm trying to say here. They're budget conscious. And maybe it just doesn't make sense for them to have their own channel anymore when there are so many digital channels out there they could share with somebody else. And I don't know what it's like where you're at, but what I've seen with a lot of these broadcasters, when they got a second channel, they didn't know what to put on it. So they put on reruns. Maybe they run the news on two or three channels because the news, the local news specifically, is a big moneymaker for the local TV stations, from what I hear. They have local channels. They have their other shows, like some daytime shows, like Ellen. Oprah's not on anymore, but I guess you still have soap operas on some shows, so I guess there's still money to be made there in local advertising. And at night, they have all the network shows. But I don't think they run those network shows on multiple channels. I think everything's on the main broadcast channel. Anyway, I'm getting off track here. So what are they going to do? That is the big question, and I really don't have much insight to that. I know that the auction's going to take place, so we probably won't see much till 2017. I know they're worried about the wireless deployment industry is worried about a shortage of tower climbers, but I don't know. I mean, if they just decommission, don't get me wrong, that's no easy task. If they decommission, will they have more time? I mean, can they just hit the power button, power it down, and that's it? I don't know. I just don't know. So let's get back to the predictions, to the forecast, to the WD forecast. So next for WD forecast for 2016, I see deployment should increase in 2016. AT&T, I don't know what they're going to do. You know, they pretty much closed everything down last year, but I'll get into that in a minute. But Verizon, T-Mobile, it seems like they're going to ramp up a little bit. They've been nice and steady, and it seems like Sprint may finally do something this year, but I'll get into that. Before I go into too much, let's talk FirstNet. The RFP, hopefully, will come out. This is the second week in January of 2016. I'm talking about 2016. I don't even know what year I'm in. What I see for FirstNet, this will just be a year of RFPs and responses. And it depends who responds, what they want to do. And just to be clear, it's more than just deployment. You have distribution, you have to have devices, you have to have billing, you have to go back into the core, they have to build the core. For 2016, I just see the RFP response happening. I see it taking a full year. It's a massive undertaking. It's not just deployment. You know, I'm a big fan. Deploy, deploy, deploy. But I got to tell you, it'll take about a year for this to go through. I believe that. For the RFP to go through, the selection, you know, there's going to be questions back and forth. Everyone's going to ask to delay the deadline. They just are. I just think 2017. So, and if AT&T takes it over, maybe no one will bid against AT&T because AT&T made it official that they're really interested. Now, if you're an AT&T contractor, woohoo, because that'll be more work for you, you know, once they figure out how to deploy it. Whether they use existing radio heads, add to the radio heads, they modify the radio heads, they'll probably need new antennas. It's a big deal. If you work on the IT side or the core side, I should say, and the networking side, it's still more work because they're going to have to increase backhaul. They're going to have to do stuff to the core to prioritize the public safety traffic. There's a lot to it. So I think that'll be a lot of work, and it'll hit in 2017 if we're lucky. Hopefully it won't delay anymore, and hopefully, you know, the government comes through with the money. I mean, they got the money from the auctions. It's not like it's coming from the taxpayer up front. To maintain it, just wait and see. We'll have to see where the money goes. Now, next, Verizon Wireless. You know, I'm really impressed with Verizon Wireless because they've been steadily growing. They've been shrinking their cell sites, meaning they've been adding cell sites. They've been adding macro and C-RAN and also some DAS, you know, ODAS, to shrink their cell sites and get the biggest bang for their spectrum. I'm really impressed with that. So they not only want concentration, but they realize, and everyone says, that their spectrum's so limited. What they have here is a way to actually get more money per megahertz of spectrum. And they do that by shrinking the cell sites. I think it's a good plan. I have to give Verizon Wireless credit. Kudos to them. However, I do think they'll ramp up. I think they'll plan for the 600 megahertz. I think they'll, you know, the other bands that they won, they'll start adding on this year. I think they may not just explode. They may wait for the 600 megahertz. The way these auctions are spread out, I know they say they spread out the auctions because of the tower climbers and the work and all that, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is the carriers, They're trying to plan everything so they don't have to do deployment after deployment after deployment, which the FCC wants them to do, right? Because it sparks the economy, which I am all for that. We need all the work we can get, right, deployment teams? Next, AT&T. Maybe they'll finally do some field work. They've been doing a little bit to improve their system, but it looked to me, and this is merely my speculation, is that they spent all of the past 2 years just saving money to buy DirecTV, and they pretty much cut everything out. AT&T is doing some cool things. I don't want to take anything away from them. One, if they bid on the FirstNet RFP, they'll not only get more bandwidth, at least they'll get more up front, which AT&T loves to hoard spectrum. They don't use it all, but they hoard it all. And the other thing I see that I like is that they're doing the wireless local loop thing, which is a broadband to the house wirelessly, which I am a huge fan of. This has been tried again and again. So I am really looking forward to them making this work. I hope it works. I hope they have the spectrum to do it. And I hope that they can not only provide broadband to the home. I mean, broadband that competes with cable. You know what I'm saying? Cable, DSL, cable, or fiber to the home. If they can do that wirelessly, we will have a breakthrough of epic proportions, because all of a sudden people just need a wireless modem. They can either sit in the window, sit in their house, sit in their office, sit wherever, you know, anywhere probably but the basement, because the coverage will suck. And then they can just have Wi-Fi in the house or LTEU in the house, which I am really looking forward to LTEU. If they get the wireless local loop, WLL, for broadband connectivity working to the home, that DirecTV investment is really going to pay off if they can actually run video through that. And if you can have video on demand with what they have now, that would be awesome. That is a vision I hope AT&T follows. Now, as far as carrier work, I think they're really going to ramp it up this year. They're going to have to, right? I mean, you got a lot of catching up to do with the other guys. Plus, even though they have a lot of spectrum, they're still going to want to shrink their cell sites down, which means they're going to want to add cell sites. Now, I know AT&T said that they weren't going to do much DAS or small cells last year. The way I look at it from a business decision, they let Verizon Wireless drive the price down. Now they'll probably move in and start doing something this year. You know, all speculation on my part. So, next, T-Mobile. First, let me say, kudos to T-Mobile. Laguerre, and I'm giving Laguerre credit because his face is the face of T-Mobile, the way I see it. The guy really did a lot, or the company of T-Mobile did a lot. They've grown a lot, they've improved their system, and they see Sprint waning, so they're going to be waxing, meaning that they're growing, they're really pushing, not only in marketing, not only in the war of the words, like Laguerre does everything, you know, at Christmas, he had the video out about how much the other carriers suck and being the on carrier, blah, blah, blah. But the one thing I'll give Laguerre, which is awesome, he's great at marketing, okay? Kudos again to him. This year, they really put a lot of effort into making that system grow and be so impressive. And they've done things that we often overlook that are revolutionary. I see them expanding their deployment maybe 20% more in 2016. At least I hope so anyway. What they've done, they've taken the small cell with Wi-Fi coverage and their local coverage, and they've given it to their customers to put in their home for coverage in their house, which I think is awesome that they did that. They sold a lot of femto cells. The cell that they have is just so impressive. I mean, things just work so well in their home. T-Mobile, technically, is really starting to grow by leaps and bounds. Now, the other thing they did, they joined CCA, which they realize they just can't grow everywhere. So they go for the population, which is where they're really concentrating their growth, in the populated areas. And you know what? That's the biggest payback that they're going to get. I have to give T-Mobile a lot of credit. They came a long way. I am really impressed by what they've done. So now that we covered T-Mobile, finally, let's cover Sprint. Sprint may finally move ahead with a densification project that they talked about for years. I mean, finally. So anyone that knows about densification, if you're in the industry, you probably know because you've done, say, 100 or maybe 200 RFP responses. And now that you probably have done 50, but you've done each one four times because Sprint is trying to drive down the price, which they would say they're trying to find the most cost-effective way to do it. Cost-effective, i.e. cheapest way to do it. That's what they're trying to find. Now, they want to be innovative. And, you know, now that they have SoftBank, they're probably going to be as innovative as possible because SoftBank really does amazing things. So I guess what they did with all these RFPs was go through a learning process, which is great for them because they just sift through it and pick at what they want. And they try to drive the prices down again, 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 again. And good luck with that. However, to you, deployment teams, here's what I say. Don't do the work for free. Don't go under your costs and don't lose money. We all want Sprint to succeed, but I don't want any of you to fail. You understand me? Deployment needs to make money to succeed. Safety is part of making that money. Because everyone says, you know, what do you have to make the money for? A, you got to pay your people. B, you got to stay in business. C, safety costs money. Even if you're doing small cell deployments and up on a ladder, you still need to have your OSHA certification and your training, or I would highly recommend it. I don't know if you need it, but I would highly recommend it. And to be safe, you need to train people. Training costs money. No one seems to want to pay for that. Everyone wants safety. No one wants to pay for training. That's what I see. And I shouldn't say no one, but you know what? It just seems like 99.8% of people don't want to pay for it. or they want to find ways around it. They want to find cheats. I don't think that's a good thing. I do wish Sprint luck. I know I'm sounding very pessimistic here, but what I want is for Sprint to succeed, because if they succeed, you know, they're a fourth carrier. But I got to tell you, what they've done in the past year, you know, nothing, is really, in my eyes, not the way to do it. But they're still in business. Sure, they're bleeding money. Sure, the executives are overpaid. Sure, they're going to lay off, what, a quarter of their workforce? But hey, they're successful, right? Yeah, we'll see. Now, the good news is, it does look like Sprint's moving ahead with the densification project. However, you're not going to see Sprint's name on it. You're going to see Mobility. And that's Mobility that ends in T-I-E, not T-Y. Mobility. That's how I pronounce it. Might be Mobility, depending upon how you want to say it. So what I see here is that Mobility is actually moving ahead with it. So that's a good thing. Now, Sprint's trying to be innovative. Like, they don't want to pay for fiber to sites. They don't want to pay for that Radwin unit, which costs, you know, a couple grand. When I say Radwin, I'm talking about a backhaul that's in the 5.8 gig. And I just said Radwin because it's the first one that popped to mind. But what they want to do is in-band backhaul, or at least that's what I see. I'm not saying this is what they will do, but this seems like their plan based on what I've seen from them. They want to do in-band backhaul. What in-band will be for them, I would imagine it's 2.5 gigahertz spectrum that they want to use. They have a ton of it, right? They have all this spectrum, and they did put out some of it, but not all of it. But if they use that for backhaul, which is a cool idea to start, I mean, it's a cheap way to get everything out there. You know, if they're building a company up to sell, that'd be a great thing. Just use that as backhaul and let the next company that buys it deal with it. But what I would say is the problem with the in-band spectrum is that it's very valuable spectrum, and to use it for backhaul instead of front haul just seems like an investor would really be upset about that, especially when you have 5.8 gigahertz for backhaul or something like that, something lightly licensed but is much cheaper. If the FCC ever frees up the 3.5 gig, you know, more spectrum and allows LTE on it, we'll be set. Mobility has their work cut out for them. God bless them, because that is going to be a full-time job and doing what they want to do. And then they have to put out the money. I mean, they really have their hands full. Now, will they do a good job? Yeah, I have a lot of faith in Mobility. I know a few people there, not many, but a few, and they seem to be really trying to come up with a good plan to do it. Now, the other thing that Sprint's probably going to do, which is bad news for the OEMs, it seems like they want to reuse a lot of the stuff they already have. I don't know what they're going to buy. I don't know what they want to purchase. It doesn't seem like they're hell-bent in buying a lot of new equipment. They want to use what they have to densify, which is great, you know, if they can do it. The other thing they want to seem to do, and this is what I gather from the way they're planning their deployment, is bypass as many of the tower companies. And what I mean by that is American Tower, Crown Castle, SBA. And they want to go out and make their own deals, which is fine, and I hope it works. God bless them. I think that'll be fine if they can actually prove it works. And again, they're trying to be innovative. So maybe it'll work, and I hope it does. You know, I really wish them the best. I know I sound pretty negative on here, but when I observe them, sometimes it just seems a little crazy, but maybe that's what it takes to really break out. And I'm excited about their deployment. Let me tell you, for one thing, I'm really excited about densification. Now, you know what's funny is Verizon Wireless and T-Mobile don't get much credit, but they're really pushing densification now. And they've been. They just didn't brag about it as much. They just got to work. Let's get to work and build out. And you know what? In the past year, they've done a lot. They're getting a bigger bang for their spectrum. And I'm really impressed with what they've done. I'll stop beating on Sprint now. So now let's talk about the LTE small cells, the C-RAN, and the DAS. And I love the HetNet. If you don't know what a HetNet is, it's heterogeneous network, which is where you have a combination of everything in one network. What that means is you have your macro cells, your small cells, your C-RAN, your DAS, and even Wi-Fi can be part of your network. And soon, LTEU will be part of the network. I'm really excited about LTEU, and I'm also excited about LTE in the 3.5 gigahertz band. That is going to be another big deal to have something lightly licensed, LTE, to replace WiMAX in the 3.5 gigahertz band if the FCC gives us enough spectrum. It'll be a great thing. It'll be beautiful. The other thing I see that's very exciting is using, say, 3.5 gigahertz and deploying small cells in that, maybe as a shared service to the carriers, but having a company, a chump like me, a little guy, do it. To me, that's very exciting. You know who else it should be exciting for is the utilities, because utilities want to do stuff like this all the time. So maybe, you know, like I said, a chump like me, a guy that doesn't have much money, could deploy something like this, start a business, and then put it out there as a small cell as a service. I know that hasn't been a big, you know, hit, small cell as a service, but it's hard when the carriers own all the spectrum, and it's just like indoor DAS until they free up the indoor, the small cells for indoors. They have to understand that we want to deploy to help their coverage. And my perception right now is that they don't care. They don't care. You know, I'm going to get off the tangent here, but they don't want to pay for indoor DAS. But yet, if you wanted to deploy for them, would they do it? They would probably have like 20 people sit down at a table and talk it over and then say, no, no, it's only like two or three small cells. We're only adding 20 customers. Let me tell you something. 20 customers times 1,000 is 20,000 customers if you let that happen nationwide, and just let the deployment teams do it. I don't get it. To me, it seems like you're in the way. To you, it seems like a headache you don't want to deal with. So carriers, well, you have to decide, are you being lazy because you don't want to deal with it? You know what I'm saying? Big companies get like that. Oh, it's too small. I don't want to deal with it. Or are you actually hurting your own business? If you don't want 20,000 ads, that's fine. Just say that. 20,000 is too small. And shut down your stores because chumps like me to buy one or two phones. What a waste of your time. All right. I'm off it now. Let's go. Now, the last thing I want to look at is indoor coverage. I know over the past years, we really rely on Wi-Fi for indoor coverage, at least for data, not for voice, right? I mean, not many people. T-Mobile, revolutionary company, got voice over Wi-Fi working, but they do understand there's a lot of issues when you have like six hotspots in an area. It's been a real problem. But if you're home and you have dedicated Wi-Fi with T-Mobile without voice over Wi-Fi, I mean, everyone I talked to said in the home, it is just great. I mean, everyone. I can't believe how well it works. The same people that say it works great in the home, they say when you're in a train station where there's shared Wi-Fi, sort of crappy. Even if they're paying for Wi-Fi, like at an airport. Now, with that said, depends on how many hotspots are around. If some airports have dedicated Wi-Fi, and usually it's free at the smaller airports, they said it works okay, works pretty well. But just so you know, at the bigger ones, that's what I see for 2016. I still see Wi-Fi growing, by the way. I should probably make a point to point that out, but Wi-Fi and, oh my God, I hope LTEU takes off. I know the Wi-Fi coalition's against it because they think it'll cause interference, but I don't know, man. I always think it's funny when they run these tests. It's like they just have one hotspot and they put up LTEU and it's worse. Why don't they put up three more Wi-Fi hotspots and see how it works? You know, maybe it still would get worse. I don't know. It always seems like, and it's on both sides, but it always seems like the tests are skewed. But I'm a fan of LTEU. I just am. I really am looking forward to it. I think it'll be a game changer because the devices just seem to have a better, what would you say, a better handoff, better way of dealing with LTE, even whether it's licensed or unlicensed. They don't care. It's a format. But when they have to switch from LTE to Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi to LTE, it seems like there's a lot of issues. I'm just saying, right? This would solve a lot of problems for the device manufacturers as well. Don't get me wrong, they're going to keep Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi's not going anywhere. Wi-Fi's been around, and I don't see Wi-Fi going away ever. I just don't. But LTEU would really change the way we could do things, and I think the speeds would be pretty awesome. All right, everybody. Be smart, be safe, pay attention. Remember, I have my wireless deployment handbook, the LTE Small Cell C-RAN and DAS edition, where it'll help you actually deploy in the small cell arena, the C-RAN arena. But I do cover deployment in general, macro and otherwise. All right, everyone. Be smart, be safe, pay attention. See ya.